Take KSL Outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And we welcome you back to hour number two and the final one, which we see every week here on KSL Outdoors Radio. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Waking up to a nice warm weekend, although there is about a 20% chance that we're going to see some precipitation that could spoil the day briefly. Anyway, if you've got plans to get out and about. Tim Hughes in studio here at Triad Center. Should remind everybody we're recording this program on Thursday as we speak, getting you ready for the weekend. But it's a pleasure to have you here to start your day with us every Saturday. Russ Smith will be back with us a little later in this half hour. I had to clear a line so that we could get our Upland Game Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources on the air with us, along with Navidomskis, who is checking in from the wheeled condo at Parts Unknown today.
Yes. Turkey hunting region.
Yeah. Oh, really? Have you seen any in your neighborhood up there?
Yes, I have, Tim. And I got to tell you, I'm glad we have this guest on, because there has never been a hunt that is more intriguing to me than this turkey. I see these big, beautiful butterballs down in the fields, and they're like awesome, and their feathers, and boy, that would sure go well in my oven.
How long have we talked about this but never acted on it is the question, and which is sort of not your style.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I see turkey, I always say, you know, you're a man of your words. What's the matter with you?
Heather Talley is with us. Heather, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. And as we look ahead, I guess it sort of got away from me, but I can't remember which day of the week it is, and one of the things we do on Utah's Morning News as a public service is remind everybody that it's Tuesday or it's Wednesday, and that if you're wearing your Monday sweatpants, you need to change them. Because I think everybody's sort
That's
of lost.
So nice of you.
Everybody's sort of lost track of days here, and the month of April is gone. So here we are, looking forward to Monday, May 4th, which happens to be the spring general season turkey hunt.
Right. Very exciting. So if anyone's looking into where to go to start hunting, you can kind of, it sort of depends on what subspecies you want to hunt. So we have Merriam's and Rio's in the state, and Merriam's are mostly just found in the southeast region. So they're in mature stands of ponderosa pines mixed with aspen and grassy meadows and some gambled oak. And a lot of times those areas kind of bleed into pinyon pine and juniper trees. So they're found a lot of times in the La Salle and Abajo Mountains if you're interested in hunting Merriam's. And then Rio's, we have in a lot of areas throughout the state, lower elevations. They love cottonwood trees for roosting, and they're often found near gambles oak and green leafy plants. So you can, if you wanted to pre-scout on Google Earth to check out some habitat areas first, before scouting for your hunt, that would give you a couple of tips.
Yeah. Populations are good, too, it looks like.
Yeah, 25,000 to 35,000 turkeys throughout the state, which is pretty good since we just started bringing them here in the 50s and then again in the late 90s. So I feel that turkeys are a really great success story for
phenomenal
Utah transportation.
Phenomenal.
Right?
Everywhere you go, Tim, in the evening as I'm fishing and stuff, those turkeys roll in. And they come from everywhere, and they congregate in these big flocks. And like I say, there's a lot of turkey out there. I'm totally impressed with how many turkeys I see on a regular basis.
Yeah, this reintroduction program really is one that I think, not just here in Utah, but all across the country, where we had no populations not that many years ago, is probably one of the bigger success stories, I would think, Heather, that those divisions out there can really point to as a reason why we have things like the Division of Wildlife.
Yeah, it's excellent. I've just love that we've got so many turkeys here. Sometimes they do cause some issues with nuisance, with human wild turkey conflicts, and we can translocate them in the winter months. So, and we have our National Wild Turkey Federation can helps us with that sometimes, and that's really great that we have really good partners with them. So, yeah, we've got enough turkeys that they sometimes we have to move them around the state as well. So that's been exciting.
We need to help them.
Hey, I have a question.
We need to help them socially distance, is what you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes,
hey,
Navi, go ahead.
Well, I just have some questions about the hunting ordinances and locations, because I see these birds all the time when I'm fishing in the streams that are around Utah. But I also see them on golf courses and next to golf courses in Davis County particularly, but along the bench regions, they're up on the mountain and they come down onto the course. I was wondering, are those that are above housing areas able to be hunted, or is that regions where we shouldn't be shooting?
So that depends. There's local municipalities have different restrictions, of course, of discharging a firearm or even using a bow within city limits. If you're outside of city limits, if you're on public property and you have to be at least 600 feet away from a dwelling, if all of those parameters are met and you're just out on public property, there's no reason why you couldn't hunt them up above some of those communities. But you just got to make sure that you're far enough away that there won't be any problems, any issues with stray pellets or anything like that.
I have a friend who lives in Manaway, and of course he goes, well, let's go out here on the porch because the turkeys are going to come down, and oh my heavens, they come in and you get to hunt them. And he says they have to use a bow in his region to hunt them, but what a better way to hunt a bird would be with a bow.
Right, which actually brings us to kind of the point of hunting on private property. You've got to get written permission first, but a lot of these landowners, like we just talked about, have some conflicts and issues with too many turkeys on their property. So if you know somebody that's got turkeys on their property, don't hesitate to ask if they would allow you to hunt and get some written permission.
One of the things this growing population makes difficult is for us to give tips on where to find them, because they can really be found everywhere. It used to be easy. We'd say, well, we have some turkeys out in this county or that county. But when you go north to south, for instance, just northeastern Utah, Duchesne River, Green River, Ashley Creek Drainage, if you go to northern Utah, Box Elder County, the north side of Raft River Mountains up Clear Creek, 1 Mile, Johnson, Wildcat Canyons, where can't you find the turkeys might be an easier thing these days.
That's true. And, you know, with that, it's interesting because sometimes Merriam's and Rio turkeys will hybridize. And then those hybrids, a lot of times, will fill those unoccupied habitats in intermediate elevations between where Rio's would inhabit and where Merriam's would inhabit. So sometimes you've got even more turkeys out there than you realize.
Yeah. Can we give some general tips as we start to wind down here about best times to hunt, what tactics might work best? And boy, we learned a long time ago from the National Wild Turkey Federation that you better know how to talk to these turkeys. And if you're hunting in the morning, you better sound like a morning turkey. If you're hunting in the evening, you better sound like an evening turkey. Because if you come in looking like the breakfast call at 7 p.m., they're going to know you are trying. You don't live here is what they're going to tell you.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And sometimes calling too much can really be a detriment as well, because, you know, wild turkeys a lot of times won't call as much as people will. So try to be, you know, don't try not to overuse the calls also, but scouting so that you know where turkeys are active and maybe setting up a blind or something beforehand. That's a good thing to do before you start your hunt. Also, like you mentioned, practice with your calls. There's multiple different types of turkey calls, so you want to make sure you're proficient with the calls that you like before the hunt starts. And if you're not able to get anything in stores right now, you can get those on Amazon. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Also, go ahead.
No, finish.
Oh, I was just going to say patterning shotguns is also a major part, that something that you really want to do before going out in the field, because, you know, at different distances with different cartridges and different manufacturers, that can really make a big difference. So once you've got kind of dialed in on where you can really be successful at a different yardage, then you'll know what the best area is for how far away you can be from your turkey and still be lethal.
Well, here's the other thing. You should be prepared to be frustrated, too, because my understanding is of all of the things you can hunt, they may be among the smartest out there.
They have incredible eyesight. So a lot of people that are used to different kinds of game, or maybe you can move a little bit, but then stop and then wait for something to look away from you before taking a shot. Turkeys, they'll flush so easily and they have a really great eyesight. So that can be, you want to make sure to have really good camo on and sit very still.
Yeah. Well, and for Navidomskis, he better be downwind from them if he's or upwind, whichever. Because coming out of quarantine, he doesn't smell good, and the turkeys will turkeys will recognize that in a hurry too.
You know, Tim, it's like girls. If you call or text too much, you're done.
You're needy. That's right. Right. All right.
Great analogy.
Heather, real quick, true or false that more turkeys are harvested in the middle of the day?
Between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. is the highest range of during the day that you can find and harvest a turkey. So, yeah, that's a great thing to ask, because a lot of people think that might not be the case, but there in the midday can be a really good time.
Well, we thought it would be fun today with all the many things that have been canceled because of this COVID mess. We got a turkey hunt that's going to go on as planned, May 4th through the 31st. As far as we know, we don't have counties that are canceling opportunities to hunt, do we?
Some counties do have some restrictions or directives on people coming in from outside of their county and camping or trying to get hotel rooms or things like that. So. Yeah. Just to keep up to date on that, you can check an article out on our website, wildlife.utah.gov, and click on the search wildlife icon at the upper right-hand corner. Type in coronavirus in that search bar, and the first article in those results, you can click on that will have all of the links to the different county health departments and land management agencies and everything, so people can see where there might be any kind of restrictions.
Got it.
But this is a statewide hunt, so you just buy a tag and then you can hunt anywhere in the state on public property.
And if you want more details, wildlife.utah.gov. Thank you so much. Heather Talley, we appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, we'll take another break. We'll come back. We'll have some news of the week for you here on KSL, so stay with us.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
All right. We thought we were going to do news of the week last hour and then got sidetracked talking about things you could do if you happen to get to some place like Sand Hollow and the parking lot is full and you get redirected somewhere. So I wanted to make sure we got in a couple of stories this week. Russell, if you're still with me.
Yeah.
And,
still here.
Yeah, all right. Let me just start with this one. And, you know, it might be – well, I'll hold off on that. A great story out of Gray, Maine, about a Maine woman who managed to turn the tables on one of the clever creatures after an encounter with a fox last week. Her name is Eliza Ruth Watson, and she says the fox approached while she was gardening and she tried to run towards it to scare it off. Instead – the Sun Journal newspaper reports the fox ran toward her. Kind of like a game of chicken. It ended up biting her hand in the process. Watson grabbed the fox.
Jeez.
Grabbed the fox by the neck. The fox picked the wrong person to mess with here.
Yeah.
This lady grabbed the fox by the neck to keep it from biting again, and after a struggle, she found a pot used to scald chickens for plucking. Shove the fox in. That's a big pot or a very tiny fox. Close the lid and dial 911. She was taken to the hospital to have her cuts cleaned and got a rabies shot, which is not fun, and Game wardens tracked the fox and took it off to be tested for rabies. But this is the story that I really wanted to get to this week, and I thought of you with your pesky squirrel in the backyard.
Oh, now, come on now. I don't think that squirrel's pesky. I like the squirrel. Well, but, yeah, it gets annoying sometimes.
I did find a story from Lafayette, Louisiana, about a squirrel that actually... Yeah?
Louisiana.
Louisiana. This one actually has a name. Russell, yeah. Meet Wilhelmina. Wilhelmina.
All right.
Wilhelmina is a squirrel who humans have gone nuts for, you might say. It was cared for by Emily Istra, a Louisiana woman whose mom found it alone in her backyard, dehydrated, suffering from an eye infection. So this lady says she tried to reach state wildlife officials to turn the animal over but got no response. Her response then was to raise it. And she's been showing it off online, doing things like eating off a plate, snuggling with her, hanging out in her swanky indoor tree house. The squirrel now has more than 1,600 followers, but produced almost as many headaches for this poor woman who was trying to do the right thing, who describes raising a squirrel as like having a toddler on meth.
Yeah. I can understand that.
I mean, imagine what it would be like.
While we're talking, I'm looking for my squirrel out here. I'm out back.
Well, imagine if you invited that one into your house.
No. It's bad enough we have him cleaning out the rain gutters, but I don't want him in the house. Hey, guys.
State wildlife officials say it's illegal to rehab wildlife without a permit after all the effort she put in.
Yeah.
And that the office remains open despite coronavirus restrictions. So, Wilhelmina has now been placed with a wildlife rehab specialist who will eventually release it. The tale of Wilhelmina.
Why, after all that, why didn't they just leave the squirrel with her? Or maybe she didn't want it anymore.
No, she was being driven nuts. She's the one that called them because this, I mean, like a toddler on meth. Did you miss that part?
Yeah. No, I got that, but you also said that they never responded to her. So, okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
She finally got hold of him. Anyway, I just thought you would enjoy the story of Wilhelmina, the one-eyed squirrel.
That's a good story.
Who now has more followers.
I want to go back to the fox.
Why?
Do you remember that? Was it a coyote or a fox that came up to us in Yellowstone while we were snowmobiling?
That, I think, was a coyote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That coyote was pretty strange.
You don't want to mess with him out there. All right. Music's winding down. We are out of time. So we're going to cut this conversation short here with a little news of the week.
All right.
And coming up in the next half hour, 7:35, Margo Van Ness. We're going to talk epic ski passes for those of you that had them this past season and had your season cut short. Stay with us.